Science of Deduction, Sherlock Holmes for the 21st Century. Episode 3, Outback. Adapted by Alexa Chipman from Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Post-production by Roy Spearman.
Probably Sherlock. I wish he'd stop texting me. Lestrade sending me to west of England in connection with the Boscombe Valley tragedy. We leave by the 10:15. It's 10 now! Bugger! Taxi! Taxi! Boscombe Valley. Sounds familiar. What now? Mind if I bring your laptop, SH? Typical. At least I can Google the place in my mobile. Not far from Ross in Hertfordshire, the largest land proprietor is a John Turner, Esquire, who made his money in Australia and returned some years ago. Oh, here's something. A murder investigation. That sounds more like Sherlock. Not again. Do not read newspaper accounts of the affair. Complete rubbish. SH. Here you are then. Thanks.
Right on time, John. Did you get my texts?
You could have just phoned me.
I've taken the liberty of packing you a bag.
You mean Mrs. Hudson did? She won't be very pleased about that.
Ah, our train. Lestrade was kind enough to email me a copy of his interviews in regard to the matter.
Could you stop borrowing my computer?
The facts as they stand are as follows. On June 3rd, that is, on Monday last...
Yes, I know what day it is.
McCarthy left his house at Hatherley.
Wait, who's McCarthy?
Didn't you read the papers?
You told me not to.
Ah, yes, of course. Mr. Charles McCarthy rents from a Mr. John Turner. They have been neighbours for many years and both spent time in Australia. He and his son are both fond of sport and quite active outdoorsmen. He left his house at 3 PM and walked down to Boscombe Pool, which is a small lake formed by the spreading out of the stream which runs down the valley, to meet someone. From that appointment, he never came back alive. Now, for Lestrade's report. Let's begin with young Patience Moran, who lives at a nearby lodge.
I was out picking flowers by the pond. They grow well in the damp ground, so I go there often. I saw Mr. McCarthy and duck behind a tree. It borders a footpath, it's still on his property, and he has a temper. He called out a strange word, cooey, I think it was. And a few minutes later, his son arrived. He started having a row.
Blast you, how can you refuse?
No, I will never do it. Stop asking, it is against my honour.
Your honour? What is this, a Victorian area angry?
Why don't you go back to Australia where you belong? And I hope they lose the ashes every bloody time.
Why, you...
It looked as though they would come to blows. And I was terrified of what they would do if I was found there. So I dropped my flowers and ran. I wasn't fast enough because I saw James, that's Mr. McCarthy's son, coming after me on the path.
Patience, I need your help. My father, he's been murdered. Fetch help, a doctor, something. Oh, God.
The body was found stretched upon the grass beside the pool. The left side of the head had been beaten in by repeated blows from behind with some heavy and blunt weapon. Under these circumstances, the young man was instantly arrested for murder.
Bit odd about the left side, though I can hardly imagine more damning evidence, although it is purely circumstantial.
And as such, it is quite slippery. It could point straight at one thing, but if you shift your point of view, it could seem to be pointing in on an equally obvious direction to something completely different. The case does look grave against James, but the landowner, John Turner, and his daughter seem convinced of his innocence and insisted Lestrade bring me down.
I'm afraid that the case is so obvious that you're wasting our time.
There is nothing more deceptive than obvious fact. And we may hit upon other obvious facts which have not been obvious to Lestrade. For example, I know that bloke across the compartment has windows on the right-hand side of his flat.
Don't be daft.
In every other respect, he's the epitome of neatness. With a light quite bright in the morning this time of year, he shaves by sunlight. But it's less and less complete as it goes farther back on the left side and becomes positively slovenly at the angle of the jaw. I could not imagine a man of such habits looking at himself in an equal light and being satisfied with such a result. I only quote this as a trivial example of observation and inference. In Lestrade's next interview, we will thus observe two minor points which he has failed to grasp the importance of.
Did your father make any statement to you before he died?
He mumbled a few words, but I could only catch some allusion to a rat.
What did you understand by that?
I haven't the slightest idea. Thought he had gone round the bend.
Why were you quarrelling with him?
I can't tell you.
If you won't answer, it will look bad against you.
Sorry, I really can't.
Was coo-ee a common signal you and your father used?
Yes.
Why would he use it when he thought you were off in Bristol?
I really don't know.
Did you see anything suspicious when you returned to find your father injured?
I was so upset, I can't be sure. But I have a vague notion that something plaid was on the ground to the left. A scarf, maybe? After my father died, I looked around again, but it wasn't there.
You mean that it disappeared?
Yes.
And how far was it from the body?
I don't know. Toward the edge of the woods?
Do you mean to tell me that someone walked out to the marsh, picked up the scarf and walked back again without you seeing them?
I had my back to it and was a bit more worried about the fact my father was dying.
Lestrade called attention to the discrepancy about his father's signals and the refusal to discuss what the row was about, not to mention the final words. It seems to me that the son is clearly responsible and was hedging.
You have both been at some pains to single out the very strongest points in James's favour. Don't you see you alternately give him credit for having too much imagination and too little? Too little, if he couldn't invent a cause for the quarrel that would elicit sympathy, and too much if he came up with something so bizarre as a dying reference to a rat and a vanishing bit of cloth. I believe I shall approach the case, assuming his statements to be correct, and see where that hypothesis will lead us. He came quite willingly when arrested. Had he appeared surprised by it, or feigned indignation, I would have seen it as highly suspicious and possibly show insight into a scheming man. His frank acceptance of the situation marks him either as innocent or someone of considerable self-restraint.
Many men have been sentenced on far less evidence.
So they have, and often wrongfully.
Car waiting for us after lunch. I knew you wouldn't be happy until you'd seen the scene at crime.
Very kind of you, but it is entirely a matter of barometric pressure.
What?
No wind, not a cloud in the sky. I think I'll finish my tea.
Might as well. The case is plain as a pikestaff, and the more one looks into it, the plainer it becomes. Still, hard to refuse a beauty like Alice Turner, eh? She'd heard of you and wanted your opinion, though I kept telling her there wasn't anything you could do which I hadn't already looked into. Speak it, devil.
Mr. Holmes?
Sherlock. Please, have a seat.
Look her, ain't she?
Double rainbow.
James didn't do it. I'm absolutely certain of it, and you should be too. Never let yourself doubt it. We grew up together, and I know his faults like no one else does. He wouldn't hurt a fly. This whole affair is absurd to anyone who knows him.
I hope that we may clear him. I will do all I can.
You read the evidence. Is there a loophole or flaw? What do you think? Is he innocent?
I think that is very probable.
See, Detective, he gives me hope.
Don't put too much stock in it. He hasn't even been to the scene yet.
But, Detective, he's right. I know it. The row with his father was about me. I'm certain of it.
In what way?
James was always quarreling with his father about me. Old McCarthy wanted us to get married, but we only cared for each other as brother and sister. Not sure why, but that infuriated his father.
And your own father? What did he think of it?
Oh, he didn't want it any more than James or I did. Only McCarthy wanted it. And he could be a bit mad sometimes.
I would like to see your father.
Oh, you can't, Mr. Holmes. Doctor's orders. He broke down completely after the news and is in the hospital. Dr. Willow said he hasn't long to live. He took this all very badly. McCarthy was the only man alive who had known Dad back in Victoria.
Thank you, Alice. You have been of great help.
Please, Mr. Holmes, let me know the minute you have any news. Just text me. Lestrade knows the number.
I will.
I need to go back to Dad now. Don't rest until you've cleared James. Please, Mr. Holmes.
I am ashamed of you, Sherlock. Why did you have to raise her hopes like that? Sometimes I think you are completely heartless.
And this is the pond where the murder took place.
Yes, and I have uncovered a new piece of evidence. It appears that McCarthy did not have to pay any rent after all. Turner let him have the place free of charge.
Does that not strike you as odd? Particularly with his insistence that James marry Turner's daughter? Do you not deduce something from that?
You have deductions and inferences. I find it hard enough to tackle facts.
You're right. You do find it hard to tackle facts.
Anyway, I have grasped one which you haven't.
Oh?
That James killed his father, and that any other theory is a lot of moonshine.
Moonshine is brighter than fog. Now, if you will excuse me, please wait here while I examine the ground.
I wonder what he's about at times, bobbing here and there like that.
Sherlock, you'll ruin your trousers if you wade into the pond. Come back!
There may be a weapon or some other trace in here.
Is there?
No. And really, you and your pack have been all over the meadow like a herd of wallowing buffalo. Fortunately, I brought my lens with me. Aha. These are the feet of James. Twice he was walking and once he ran swiftly so that the soles are deeply marked and the heels hardly visible. That bears out his story. He ran over to his father. And here are McCarthy's feet as he paced up and down. He stood here for some time. Ah, tiptoes, with square boots. They come, they go, they come again. Of course, for the scarf. Now, where did they come from?
Sherlock, what are you doing? That's just a rock.
This might interest you. It's the murder weapon.
How'd you know?
The grass was growing under it, and there was no sign of the place where it was dug out of.
And the murderer?
Tall man, left-handed, limps with the right leg, wears thick-soled boots and is fond of plaid, smokes cigars and carries a blunt penknife in his pocket. There are other indications, but these may be enough to aid us.
What a load of bloody nonsense.
You work your method. I shall work mine. I'll be gone by the evening train, by the way.
and leave the case unfinished?
No, finished.
But the murder?
Solved.
Who was the criminal then?
The man I described.
Yes, but who is he?
Surely it's not difficult to find out. Not many living hereabouts.
If I wandered about countryside looking for a left-handed bloke with a limp, I'd be laughingstock of Scotland Yard.
I gave you a chance. Good afternoon, Lestrade. I'll text you before I leave.
Have you really solved it? Already? How?
Cooey! What do you make of that call?
It's Australian. Meant for his son.
No, John. It was meant for a fellow Australian. There were two in the neighbourhood, as you recall. McCarthy didn't know his son had returned early, therefore it was the other.
Turner! The landlord!
I took the opportunity during the ride over to look up Victoria on my mobile. I also sent a text to Bristol for some clarification. What can you read on this map?
Have your hand over it.
What can you read in the part that isn't covered?
Ararat.
And after I've removed my hand?
Ballarat.
Precisely. He was trying to tell his son who the murderer was. According to Alice Turner, where had her father known McCarthy?
Victoria. Near Ballarat, of course.
This pool itself is quite remote. It must be approached through the farm or estate. The young girl who was here picking flowers mentioned that it was not accessible to the general public. That leaves a neighbour.
But the limp?
The impression of his right foot was always softer than his left.
The left-handedness?
The body was struck by a blow directly from behind, but on the left side of his head, as you yourself remarked upon. He stood behind a tree waiting for James to leave and spent the time smoking a cigar. I found the stump of it nearby. The tip had been badly cut off, thus the blunt penknife.
There's nothing for it then.
I believe we need to pay Mr. Turner a visit, doctor's orders or no.
I should be able to get us in.
Mr. Turner, I wish to see you in order to avoid a scandal. I know all about McCarthy and the pond.
God help me! But you must understand, I wouldn't let that young man come to harm. I would have said something if it went any farther.
I'm glad to hear you say so.
I would have spoken before now, had it not been for my dear girl. It would break her heart to hear I was arrested for murder.
It may not come to that. I'm not an official agent. In fact, it was your daughter who requested I come. James must be got off, however.
My doctor questions whether I will live a month. I'd rather die under my own roof than a jail.
Tell us the truth. I'll write it down, and you sign it. John here can witness the confession. I will only produce it to save James if there is no other choice.
Very well. I want to spare Alice the shock. My story will not take time to tell, though I took time in acting. McCarthy was a devil incarnate. God keep you out of the clutches of such a man. He blasted my life these last 20 years. I was a young chap back in Australia, hot-blooded and reckless. I got among bad companions and took to drink. Well, to use the old romantic term, I was a highwayman. There were 6 of us in the gang. We led a wild, free life of it, sticking up stations, robbing tourists. Blackjack was the name I went under, part of the Ballarat gang. One day I pulled a particularly good heist, held up an armoured lorry. There were 2 guards. 3 of our boys were killed, and one of them, I put a gun to the head of the other. It was the very same McCarthy. I wish now that I had shot him. But I couldn't bring myself to pull the trigger in cold blood. Our gang became wealthy, but wanted men. I managed to get back to England and determined to settle down with a respectable life. Everything was going well for me. I had little Alice with her, wee hand leading me down the right path. and plenty of money.
When McCarthy saw you again?
Yes, I met him in Regent Street with hardly a shirt on his back.
Here we are, Jack. We'll be as good as family to you. There's two of us, me and my son. And you can have the keeping of us. If you don't, well, it's a fine law-abiding country, and there's always a policeman with an ale.
It's all went wrong from there. My wife died and McCarthy lived rent-free on my best land ever since. Everywhere I turned, there was his cunning, grinning face at my elbow. It grew worse as Alice grew up, for he soon saw I was more afraid of her knowing my past than the police. Whatever he wanted, he got without question. Land, money, until finally he asked for something I would not give. He asked for Alice. He wanted his own son to inherit everything I owned. As if I would give his cursed family. As if I would have his cursed family joined with mine. We were to meet at the pool midway between the houses to talk it over. When I arrived, he and his son were quarrelling, so I pulled out a cigar and waited.
Blast you! How can you refuse?
No, I will never do it. Stop asking. It is against my honour.
Your honour? Why is this? The Victorian era, you ingrate!
Why don't you go back to Australia where you belong? And I hope they lose the ashes every bloody time.
Why, you...
Oof! What right have you to demand I marry her? What is she? An antique chair to be bartered for? We're both adults.
You would inherit everything!
I want to get on with a girl I fancy. What do I care what property she owns? And Alice is like a sister to me, so lay off. Besides, I already have a girlfriend in Bristol.
When I heard them quarrelling about my girl like that, something in me snapped, Mr. Holmes. How could he urge his son to marry her like? She was a slut of the street. I already knew I was dying. I couldn't bear to be in his power a moment longer. I picked up a large stone and struck him down with no more compunction than he had been some foul and venomous beast. His cry drew James back and I fled, but lost my scarf in my haste, so I had to come back to retrieve it. That is the true story of what occurred at the pond.
It's not for me to judge you. I only hope John and I will never be exposed to such a temptation.
What will you do with me?
In view of your health, nothing. I will keep this confession, and will use it if I must. If not, it'll find its way into Mrs. Hudson's shredder, and your secret will be safe with us. I fear Lestrade will have a laugh at our expense for this.
You couldn't give him the name. It wouldn't be right. Turner's suffered so much already.
Indeed. And, if that clock is accurate, we have half an hour to catch the last train back to London.
Featuring the voice talent of Roy Spearman as narrator, Terry Cooper as Sherlock Holmes, David McIver as Dr. John Watson, Gareth Bowley as Detective Inspector Lestrade, Bernadette Groves as Alice Turner, Stevie K. Farnaby as John Turner, Richard Casto as Charles McCarthy, Curtis Carlson as James McCarthy, Daniel Milovic as Patience Moran. Music courtesy of Kevin MacLeod of http://incompetech.com. This is a Misfits Audio production. Please visit misfitsaudio.com for more information. Released under Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license in 2012.